Burton Radio.
I'm Ray Burton, and welcome to another Let's Talk Gardening podcast. Our mission is to provide listeners with interesting, informative topics and up-to-date information. My co-host is Faye Caro, an award-winning gardener, horticulturalist and media presenter. Faye's passion is educating people. Oh, and she loves bugs a lot too. My passion is simply beautiful, healthy gardens. And together, each week, we cover many great gardening subjects.
Saturday morning and here come the girls, Ray and Faye, with Let's Talk Gardening.
And greetings. Great to be here. We are ready to go. We're all cylinders are happening. 94841927 is our number, and our email address is gardening@curtainfm.com.au. When you're calling today, you'll be speaking to Bev Dering and our researcher extraordinaire, quizmaster, chef, all those good things. John Glidden is standing by as well. Huge thanks to Chris Bartlett and Yvonne Hall for today's music inspiration. Excellent kickstart to the weekend, I always feel. And our cycling DJ, Jim Crinan, wrapped up the cycling show just now, and he will return at 10 a.m. with the Classic 70s. So look forward to that. Faye, good morning.
Good morning, Ray. How are you doing?
I'm all right. And how? Lots of paperwork in front of you. You look very, very busy.
Well, researching and reading up on all the emails that have come in and making sure I'm readily prepared.
Very, very good. And tell listeners about our program today, who we have with us, or the interviews we're having.
We will be speaking with botanist Vanda Longman, and she's been involved with producing a book called Growing Locals, and it's all about gardening with local plants in Perth. Now, Vanda was actually featured in the Sunday Times last weekend with her husband, so look forward to hearing more about her story today.
It looks like a very nice book, and we're giving that book away as well. And what I like is it's focused on Perth.
Absolutely.
That's most, I think, important.
We could take a leaf out of this book, so to speak, and have a think about what our gardens are telling us now and where we want to go in the future with them. And it's a very personal thing to decide what you want from a garden, and we're all different. You know, I can't tell you what to do, but when you make your decisions, perhaps you go off to the nursery and you buy all these plants and you take them home and you start looking after them, you then get a feel for, was that the right decision or do we have to do something differently? If your plants are burning, I've talked about, well, what position are you going to be in next year? Do you need a canopy for that? Do you need to think about putting in a tree that will lose its leaves in winter and let in sunlight, but provide that umbrella to protect the plants underneath? And livability, how do we want to use our gardens? Do we want something just looks good and no maintenance? Because you can do it, but you have to stick a little bit to your target and work out what your keywords are and then make appropriate plant choices.
Keywords.
Like? Trouble-free.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Looks good all year round,
right,
whether
okay.
we have frost or 45
so
degrees.
That's your criteria.
That was one of the things that I learned many years ago, because we moved to a property and I'd collected a lot of plants that I loved, started putting them in the garden, and then in April one year we got frost. And so things burnt off. A lot didn't recover through winter. When they started coming good in September, we had another frost in October, which was quite unusual. But that told me that I didn't want to be playing catch up with my garden every season and say, oh, that, you know, that'll come back. You know, you want something to look good
all the time.
Yeah. Or you want to work out how to manage it. The same right now, we look at our gardens and go, okay, we've cut back on our water, or I've been out there hand watering on the third day every week or on the 44 degree days. Is this what I want to do next year? I'm getting older. What looks good? What do I love? What am I going to let go of? How can I do things differently? So you, the listeners, look at your gardens and you decide. You decide on your criteria And from that, we build a picture of what our gardens are going to look like in the future.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people will be regretting their fake lawn choices. There's been a lot more about that in the news lately.
Yeah.
Pests and diseases, the polyphagous shot hole borer has appeared on the radar.
Yeah.
That has a huge impact. Citrus trees are being targeted with gall wasps. Mm. The news is not all bad. There's a lot happening out there, and I actually went for a bushwalk yesterday in our bush, and the banksias are going off. Like, the blooms are amazing, and the banksia bees are out there. So if you've got banksias in your garden, stand and look at them for 10 minutes. There is a special bee that's quite large and bluish black with patterns on its face. Mm-hmm. And you are very likely to see these bees on Banksia species. And there's a few little plants popping up in the sandy soil.
Mm.
Like, honestly, talking to Vanda today, growing locals, there's a lot in it, how we can add some to our gardens and or verges and make for a better place.
Okay. Well, we look forward to that. That's happening at 20 past 8. And as we mentioned, we have this beautiful book and we will be giving that away after we've spoken with Vanda Longman. You must be a Curtin FM member, so keep that in mind. And it is a book that would need to be collected from the radio station. 9:05, we are chatting about bulbs, WA bulbs. Yes. Lynn Chambers, Tulips with a Difference. So let's learn about what to plant out now and how we get the most out of our bulbs. And as Faye's written here, it's time to chill. Yes.
Well, the nights have gotten a bit cooler, right? Well, some of them, not all of them. Last night was a warm night.
But I had the air conditioning on last night.
I tell you what, two mornings ago, I was out there in a jacket for the first part of the morning. It was cool.
Okay. So yeah, I'm not getting there yet. I know what you're saying. There's a little bit of freshness about, but to me, it's pretty warm out there. And, you know, a 34 tomorrow. And, yeah, we're still having some very, very warm conditions in our gardens. So it is very, there's nothing we can do. We just have to.
It's interesting to plan, because what we've done other years won't fit the mold this year. Things have changed. There is no doubt that this is one of the longest dry periods that we've had in a very long time.
Mm.
And as gardeners, we really, really feel it. You wander around the garden and some things are scorched. I did quite a bit of cutting back this week, and I think it'll be all right, because the new growth won't actually appear until after the hot weather. It'll be at least a week before I see any signs of new shoots.
Mm.
And hopefully sometime not too far away, we will get some rain. Now, I tell you what, the ants have been going nuts.
Mm-hmm.
They're really going for gold. So that tells me that they're preparing for some rain. So I suspect that when it happens, the heavens will open.
I see, probably an old wives' tale, but I see swallows everywhere at the moment. And that's always supposed to be a sign of rain. But, I mean, perhaps I'm just looking at anything at the moment.
Well,
I'm grasping at straws.
Well, there are swallows around, but there's also tree martins. And a couple of months ago, I found these babies in the garden on one of the hottest days. And I watched them go up and down the trunk, searching for grubs in the bark, grubs and beetles. Mm. And yesterday I was out in the garden and I looked up and there they were. There was three or four of them just scanning up and down the tree trunk looking for their bugs.
Mm.
And they're a small bird. They look quite similar to swallows.
Yeah, okay.
But, yes, there are signs in nature that are indicative.
We're trying to read this.
Well, the other thing I look for is when the toilet water's down.
Okay.
Because that's to do with barometric pressure.
Yeah, okay.
As I understand it.
Yeah, okay. Water's down everywhere if you look in our lakes and our rivers.
No. But no,
I know
if,
what you're saying.
If the level drops,
like
by the time you go back in the morning and you go, oh, the level's dropped, I think it's barometric pressure.
And that means?
Rain.
All right. Okay, so how long's that been happening?
Well, I haven't seen it.
Oh, you haven't seen it in your
toilet? No, but I look for it.
Oh, I see. I'm getting confused. All right.
I'll let you know when I see it, Ray.
Thank you. 9484 1927. Yeah, ring in with your garden questions. We've got our normal prizes to give away, a $75 gift voucher from Green Life Soil Co. and one from Bigger Trees as well, and also the extra bonus of this beautiful book that we're giving away this morning after 20 past 8, after we've chatted with Vanda Longman. Now, I know you've got lots of emails and questions.
I will get started. This one has come in from Ruth just this morning, and she sent in photos of an orange tree that was taken in 2022, and it was thriving and loaded with fruit. She said she has taken another photo, more current, and it is looking very sad. What can you suggest to do to bring this healthy tree back?
Yeah.
Well, for anyone out there who's got anything that looks unhealthy, you can certainly see the top of that. There are sticky bits, so they're dying back or have died back. So you remove any dead, dying or diseased wood from out of the tree, any at all, and you cut it back to where there's healthy growth. So when you cut your stem, look at your stem. Is it healthy or is it rotting and dark in the centre, in which case you cut back further? You probably might know what that looks like if you've cut back roses. So you want to cut back into healthy wood. Now I want you to look, really look at the stems. Look for any signs of pest. There might be scale. I also want you to check for any swellings, because the citrus gall wasp at this time of year will be beginning to swell in the stems of the plants, and that will become more noticeable over the next couple of months. So you would cut that out and you would put it in a black plastic bag and leave it in the sun to solarize for a couple of weeks before disposing of it. Now, we will talk about pests if you do find any, but that will be the key thing to do. And then following on from that, once you've cleaned up the plant, also take a little bit from all over. Reduce the size of the plant to match the roots. So it's contained in quite a large planter box. So don't let the tree get too big.
Top heavy.
Yeah. Mm. Remove all the fruit and probably take off probably about a third, I would say. And then you want to do some soil treatment. So certainly a wetting agent, something probiotic, whether it's seaweed or a product that actually helps the soil. You can use compost. I want you to use mulch. And twice a year minimum, I would use controlled release fertilizer. So that is for flowering and fruiting plants. I say it all the time. If you do nothing else, and if you do that twice a year, that will keep your plants reasonably healthy.
Mm.
And then, of course, water. So check that the water is getting down into the soil. Because it's contained, it's like managing a bonsai, for example.
Mm.
So, and you and I've already talked about this with your magnolias this morning, keeping the canopy to match the roots.
Mm. Yeah, so, correct.
Yeah. And not sure how long that will be okay for. Certainly, citrus are shallow rooted, so mulch is very important for that. It's filled the size of the pot, so it's run out of energy. That's why you've got to look after the soil and the canopy.
Yep, agreed. Mm. Okay, we can squeeze one more in.
Okay, well, this came in from, oh, there was something else about that too. A lovely comment here. And this email had been from Ruth. It was, thank you in advance for your help. You both bring something different to the Saturday morning and both are very remarkable with your knowledge. Curtin is very lucky to have you.
Oh, gee, please. Let's have that laminated and put
lovely.
It on the manager's door.
Thank you, Ruth. Very
thank
nice.
You very much. It's very kind.
And in regards to Mary's tree, she has a large gum tree that she wants to transplant. And
oh yes,
she's going to give it a go.
Wow.
So this information I passed on from Leon.
Mm.
And the issue with removing large trees is that the feeding roots are outside the drip line of the foliage. So to dig it up, we need to be able to take the feeder roots. Leaving the other half of the root system leaves the tree while the other reshoots. Now, what he's suggesting is you go around the tree and you dig trenches or holes in, you divide it into eight and you take out four. So you backfill with a potting mix, something the roots to grow into, and then when you take the plant or the tree, it's got some new roots to get it started. So hopefully the other half recovers after transplanting, and he hopes that his little knowledge is of interest and that you can understand the explanation. Love your show. So thank you, Leon. That is certainly, this is how they move large trees. If you've got time, you dig trenches and you encourage some new growth to get started, and then that gives the plant a head start when it's moved.
Yeah,
it's hard with a big tree. There are good examples on YouTube if you want to search how to do that.
Big amazing task. Mm. All right, we're going to have a short break. When we return, we are having a chat with Vanda Longman, botanist, and we're talking about even if a small garden gives the chance to bring some of Perth's remarkable natural biodiversity home. Curtain Radio. 22 minutes after 8, you are tuned to Let's Talk Gardening with Ray and Faye. And as discussed before the break, we have a book here called Growing Locals. It's a book about growing local plants in Perth, which we absolutely love the idea of. It's a beautiful looking book. And online with us, we have botanist Vanda Longman, who was very much involved in this book. How are you, Vanda? Are you with Ray and Faye?
Hello. Very well, thank you. Another beautiful day here in Perth.
Another sunny day in Perth, yes.
Yes.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
And I've just got the photo in front of me of your story in the recent Sunday Times, strictly a take on being a true local. And tell us a bit about your garden, Vanda.
My garden is in City Beach, so it's a coastal garden on Quindalup soil. And my mother-in-law, when she bought the property 50 years ago, always had the idea that she would like to have local native plants in it. So she was well before her time, I think. And what was considered a local native back then isn't necessarily what is the case truly. So a lot of plants that now we consider weeds were thought to be local natives. But anyway, I came on the scene in 1988, and from then on, gradually, I've been replacing any of the non-natives with local natives. And I've got the idea from a friend, Robert Powell, who is very passionate about this. And yeah, I've just continued, and now I've got over 50 local native species in my garden. And last year was a big exciting moment when I went out in the garden, and even though I hadn't planted it, I found a greenhood orchid growing. So we had provided the right habitat over the last 30 odd years that I've been here, and a windborne seed of the orchid must have blown in and found the right fungi in the soil and got itself growing. So that was very exciting last year.
So this garden's been developing for 50 years, is that right?
Yes, it was just a sandy block when my parents and all bought the property. But, you know, over time things have changed. I've had little children, then older children, and I haven't necessarily focused on it so much. So it's been in ebbs and flows. And last year I had I planted 14 new species, because with time nurseries around Perth are starting to supply more of these local native plants, and I was very excited last year because I'd been working on the book and species list for the Swan, for the Perth metropolitan region, and I thought I'm just going to have a look what nurseries are supplying at the moment, and very excited to find a whole lot of new species that I hadn't been able to get before. So
that's amazing. I was just going to ask you, where do you go to find a list of species that suit your area?
Well, I have helped with this book that you've mentioned, and what the book has is a map of the Perth metropolitan region, and from the map you can work out where your garden is, what the soil type is, and as I said before, mine's Quindalup, but it goes across, it goes up to Two Rocks, down to almost Mandurah, and then east to almost Gidgegan up, and so you can figure out what your soil type is. And then there's a list of species at the back of the book, and the Perth metropolitan region has got over 1,800 species in it, which is amazing considering that all of the of Great Britain and Ireland combined only have 1,400 plant species, and that's an area 50 times bigger than our Perth metropolitan region. So that's we really are very, very lucky to live in the Perth metropolitan region. It's just a botanical wonderland.
It is,
anyway,
isn't
so
it?
From the,
we,
that's right.
We don't often don't realize. Give credit yeah. for what's in our own
backyard,
yes,
yeah, local spaces.
Right. Yeah,
wow,
people come 1,800. People come from all over the world to see our flora, and I can't believe I grew up here. I went to uni, I thought, I'll study botany, and didn't realise the significance of the place I was in. It's just a botanical wonderland.
And so what as a botanist, Vanda, what has your career been like? How has it expanded over the years?
I've been working a lot of time with the Wildflower Society of WA, doing surveys out in the wheat belt, in the southwest of Western Australia. I've also worked with what's called now DBCA, and one of my last jobs with DBCA was helping in a team transforming a 39 hectare weedy paddock near Jandakot Regional Park into a banks of woodland by planting seedlings and direct seeding of local native species. And so from just one or two local native species that were in this weedy paddock, by 5 years' time we had a banks of woodland with 71 native species. And in areas that we had the opportunity of transferring topsoil from an area that had been cleared nearby, we had 114 native plant species. So that's just in 5 years. And the highlight for me at the end of that work that I was involved in it was doing a survey of the site and examining Bankshire cones and finding the chewing marks of them from the Carnaby's cockatoos. So yeah. We were providing food for the endangered Carnaby's, which was a
so
real
rewarding.
Humbling. Mm, yeah, mm,
that's right. Mm. No, that's a magnificent project. Well, it must be very, very satisfying.
Yes, that's right. Yep.
Mm-hmm. And so the book is out now and
I've got it in my hot little hand. It's a large book, but what I like about it has a soft cover. I always prefer that. It's heavily illustrated, so much information, very, very detailed. And I think, for people that would like to learn more exactly about the type of work that you've been doing, Vanda, this is a must-have. I'm sure that the listeners will be very keen to get their hands on it.
Yeah, that's right, yes.
Well, that's
I agree.
Yeah, fantastic. So we'll give that book away today. And I guess if people want more information, perhaps the Wildflower Society is a great place to start. There are branches in different suburbs and they meet monthly. Mm. So that's certainly a great place for people to go along to and learn more.
That's correct. Yep, that's right.
And what's next for you, Vanda? Are you having a little rest after all of this or what's your next project?
Oh, it's an ongoing thing, enjoying my garden.
Yeah.
It's just a wonderful place to watch and observe and record all the plants and the animals, so many fauna species and all that. So I have been considering, because I've only got the front yard as a local native garden at the moment. My backyard is a traditional garden with pawpaw trees and things like that. But it's getting to me now. I'm starting to think maybe I should be transforming my backyard into local native garden, because it's actually a really easy way to garden as well, because you don't have to do any soil improvement, don't have to apply fertilizer, because our plants have evolved to our natural soil. So, and I've been thinking as I get older, and I think you were mentioning something that alluded to this before, I thought, why not do the backyard as well? Because it's quite hard work maintaining it, and I can just sit back and relax and make iNaturalist observations of insects and things like that in the future. So that's
maybe your next move.
Yeah. What a wonderful project. Well, thank you very much, Vanda. It's been lovely speaking to you, and you go and enjoy your garden.
Thank you very much.
And the weekend.
Thank you for having me.
All right. You take care. Thanks. Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
And that was botanist Vanda Longman. She was participating in a book called Growing Locals, a book about growing local plants in Perth. And I think that this is important. And her story is very, very interesting. And just, you know, flicking through this book while we were talking to her, I can just see so much detailed information in there. A little bit of a Bible, right?
I like the list of plants in there too. Mm. Like I like to have ticking lists.
Yeah. So no, I'm just looking at it. It's a serious book. If you would like to win this book, you must be a Curtin FM member, and it is a large book. You know, it's a good 30 centimetres in height, and it's a large book. It's not too heavy, but you would need to collect this. It's not one that we could pop in the post, so you would have to come to the station. So make that a consideration, but give Bev a call now on 9484 1927. This book is yours. Lucky whoever wins it, actually. I like that one for myself.
I
as
know.
Well. Yes.
That would be nice.
Okay, and we shall carry on. All right. Let me see. All right, the lines are going crazy there. So what we'll do whilst the lines are occupied is another email.
Okay.
Got lots of work to do.
Well, this one's come in from Nicole Ingram, Community Gardens of Australia WA coordinator, and there are some workshops going around identifying plant, pest and diseases, and they're being held at the Hammersley Habitat Community Garden on the 13th of April, Kalamunda Community Garden, 14th of April, Narragabup, which is Regional Rockingham Environmental Centre, and that's on the 20th of April, and Earthwise Community Association in Subiaco on the 21st of April. So these are run by DPIRD, and it's all about identifying plant pests and diseases around the place. So that could be very worthwhile. Now, to register, communitygardenwa.org. Now, what we'll do, we'll share this on the Let's Talk Gardening Facebook page so that it's easy for people to click on and register.
There's lots of opportunities for people to educate themselves, isn't there? There's a lot out there. You just got to keep your finger on the pulse.
Yeah, and if you've got a query, if you see something, one of the great initiatives of DPIRD is the My Pest Guide Reporter.
I'll say.
So if you see something you're not sure of, snap a few photos. Certainly if it's a pest, photos from the top, photos from the side, antennae, back end, underside, whatever you can get a hold of, and preferably clear in focus photos are really helpful. Another place to find information is, of course, on Facebook, the Insects of Perth and Southwest Western Australia Facebook page. A lot of people there to identify bugs, and often when someone sees a pest in their garden or some sort of insect, it will be around everywhere. It's amazing how we get cycles of certain
sightings.
Bugs or amazing different insects that pop up at the same time. Rain moths will come out when we get a flood of rain.
Mm-hmm. So now you've got your own exciting news to announce as well.
Well, I have.
And you should explain to the listeners because, yeah, a lot of people wouldn't understand. Now, I must also say we do have a winner for the book, Patricia of City Beach, and that's a great coincidence because that's where Vanda lives as well. So good on you, Patricia. You're going to love this absolutely beautiful book. It's valued at $50. It's sensational, so congratulations to you. Your news, please. Drum roll.
So Pest Guide Reporter app is, of course, one place that you can send for an ID. The insects groups on Facebook is another. And another one which has a worldwide database is iNaturalist. And once you get used to using it, it is really simple. So you log in and sign up. I did this a few years ago. And I started uploading all my sightings. So like Vanda, the species that belongs in our Banksia woodland, I didn't include plants that I've planted, plants that are in the bushland or bugs that have flown in, birds, reptiles, anything that moves and even if it doesn't, fungi and slime molds. So I've been doing that for a number of years. And I also uploaded my plethora of photos found on the property going back prior to 2007. So I've been working at it for a long time. I then realised the importance of what we have in our natural environments and the fact that they're disappearing. So I've been working on getting all these numbers up and getting everything into the database. And the last few months, I was getting up around 900, in the 900s. So I set myself a target of reaching 1,000, and this week it got closer, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I even had a couple of people go in and double-check some of the identifications to increase my research-grade identifications. So Mel from Rewilding Suburbia, Daniel Heald, Jean Hoare are just some of the people that have helped me along the way. Mm. And this week I topped the thousand mark. So we're now currently sitting on 1,003 species of things that I've found on the property. So there's over 3,000 observations. So these are photos of all different sorts of things, organisms, flora, fauna, and fungi, and slime molds.
Mm-hmm.
So 1,003. So I'm pretty chuffed and I'm still going.
Still and counting.
Mm. All right. I must say, just quickly, I also got some identifications back from Terry Houston. He took some specimens from my place a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
So I've narrowed down some more native bees and got positive identifications on them. A wasp, Spilomena, which is an aphid, it targets aphids, but also thrips, which I thought was interesting. And it is a tiny wasp.
Mm.
So there's lots happening out there. And I think one of the things that happens with our gardens and the pests that come into them, and having talked to Vanda, let's add some native plants. Let's mix it up. The reason that pests get a hold is because they're coming in. It's like they're targeting this monoculture. Doesn't matter what it is. If you've got your line of cabbages and the white cabbage moth comes in, it's got a huge feast.
Mm.
So mix that up with other things, beneficial plants and flowering plants, so that you've got home for everything and the pests won't be as much of a problem.
As prolific, exactly. Now, we do have a couple of calls. We're going to have a break. Ron and Gay, we're with you on the other side of this. Radio. Straight out to the lines, we are in Thornley. Ron, thanks for waiting.
No problem. Morning, ladies.
Morning.
Good morning. How can we help you, Ron?
Well, I've got my lemon tree is malfunctioning. The lemons look all right, but when we cut them in half, they're rotten in the middle and it's not fruit fly. It's just they look off, if that makes sense.
How have they been going for water?
Probably too much.
I have experienced dry in the middle from, I think, lack of water. Any signs of a bug in the centre?
No. It's just, I suppose, a discolouring and a drying out of part of the fruit.
All right. Have they been left on the tree too long?
No, because they're just starting to ripen now.
Oh, okay. All right. You'll have to leave that one with me, and I'll see what I can find out about that.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for your call, Ron.
Bye-bye. Okay,
cheers. And let's go to Gosnells talking about proteas. Gay, how are you?
Yeah, not bad, thanks.
Good. Good. Go ahead.
Yeah, I had three proteas and another native out in the front garden. Well, sorry, I've got five. One had been really big and all the leaves started getting brown and died on me, and the other one too, and now the other two get to do the same. They're dying on me, and I just don't know, but I've got a brick wall around it, like a limestone wall, but not right on the... It goes alongside the front garden bed.
What springs to mind is it could be environmental after the summer that we've experienced. Proteas, well, depending on which one they are, can suffer from a fungal disease. Was there any spotting on their leaves?
Yeah, there was, and I treated them. I read on the Bunnings website or one of the websites, so I treated them, sprayed them, and also gave them sea salt gold as well.
Right.
But the other two, my gardener cut them right back to see if they will come back. I mean, one's got a really big root in it, but it doesn't, I don't know whether they'll come back or not.
Have you changed their watering, or have you kept up some watering for them with the hot summer that we've had?
Yeah, I have, yep. The sprinklers, like, they've got drippers on them. That like go when the sprinklers come on, and then I've been going out there watering them as well.
Well, unless I could see a photo of the leaves to determine what perhaps the disease or fungus is, it would be very hard to know. What was the spray that you used on them?
I forget the name of it that said to spray for the fungal.
Right, okay. I don't really have enough information to provide you an answer. Like, if I can see a photo, that may go some of the way because it might show the environment that it's in. I don't think limestone would have a detrimental impact on the proteas.
No, but I remember my mum growing proteas in limestone environment.
Narrowing down which protea it is, because there are a lot.
Two of the king proteas.
Okay.
And
they're beautiful.
The other two that look, I don't think they're going to come back, is two pincushions.
It's a shame. I would like to help you. If you can send us through a photo, that would be a big help, and then I can at least have this exchange with you, asking more questions and trying to narrow it down, because it would be nice to save them if possible.
Yeah, the gardener has cut them right back, but as I say, one's got a really big root, I'm hoping it'll come back, but I don't know.
I also think cutting them back is a good idea, but the fact that we're having this long, hot summer and it is going on, sometimes they kind of get to the end of their use-by date and it's not worth trying to get them back because they get old and manky and like our West Australian natives when they've been left too long. Sometimes you're better off starting again.
Yeah, the two pincushions, one is... was lovely, got the yellow flowers, and the other one, which hasn't been in there as long, but the other two that died, well, one of them died has been, well, when we first moved in here, it was in a pot.
Mm.
And that was back in 2017.
Well, and that's the other thing. They may just have a limited life. They may have expended their energy. Anyway, yep, if you can send us an email, that'll be great, and we can move on with the other callers.
Where do you send it to?
Gay, I'm going to put you back to Bev and she can give you the details.
Okay.
Okay, thanks for that. All right, we shall move on. Let me see. We're heading to Forestfield. Robin, how are you?
Morning. I'm fine, thank you, and thank you for a wonderful session. I'm concerned that I'm living in an area which was a building development, the topsoil was removed, and we are trying to garden for about 20 years in building soil.
Mm.
We have added anything you would like to think of to try to overcome it, but we still have soil that will not hold water, does not support long-term plant growth. Mm. Any ideas? Because it's got to be happening across all of Perth developments.
Well, that is interesting. One thing that I could perhaps suggest is that you bring in new soil and mix up with what you've got. But it would also be beneficial to work out what you've got to start with. And a lot of our soils don't hold water, but our native plants do quite okay, often once they're established. Having said that, there is a cycle with them. And so some will die after a period of time. For example, you know, the Banksias. They will perhaps die after a period of time and then the trunk falls and it then supports new life. You've got pioneer species like acacias that start off and they help set up the environment for other plants. But getting your soil tested might be the first thing to rule out if there's anything problematic. We'd like to know what the pH is. But, yeah, bringing in new soil.
Very alkaline.
Very alkaline. Sorry. Okay. So doing perhaps what Vanda said, going to the species list and growing plants that belong in your area, but also what I've done with my verge in some places is dig a large hole to get plants established. I've started some and I've had better results adding compost and clay to the planting hole to get them started.
Mm.
So dig a bigger area and do your best to improve that. I also found that digging a hole, adding water and then mixing it up created quite a slurry in the hole. So definitely preparing your planting hole in the beginning. And I'd say if you could start doing this after the next week because we're still going to get some mid-30s in the next week. Starting tube planting and initially adding water once or twice a week until the rains come. Like now is going to be the best time to get your plants started.
Thank you. That's really helpful.
Well, I hope so. I know, look, it can be hit and miss and we don't always get the results we want, but we have to keep trying.
No. One of our difficulties is we can't plant trees. We only have spaces for shrubs and small ones at that.
Then pots.
Mainly under 2 metres.
Yep, and you can get small mallees and you can keep them to a size and you can grow in pots. So we have to move on now, Robin, but, yeah, enjoy.
Yeah.
Bye-bye. Okay, Thank you. Cheers for that. And when we return, we're chatting with James and Shirley. 100.1 FM. Thank you for your company this morning with Let's Talk Gardening. Straight out to the lines, we're in Caversham. James, how's it going?
G'day, how are you?
We're well, thank you.
I've got a bunch of Pittosporum screen masters. think I pronounced it right.
Yes.
They seem to get attacked by ants, the root, and then the bottom section of the leaves disappear, well, fall off, and then it just ends up going up and they end up dying. I don't know how to get rid of the ants, and it could be a lack of a bit of water, but they get morning and night most days, so I'm not too sure.
Morning and night watering, James?
Yeah.
Often hedges can get scale and or mealybugs in them. Have you seen any signs?
Scale as well.
Okay, and that's why you've got ants there. So
they are prone to that particular tree, the Screenmaster.
Yeah. Mm. So it's probably something that is going to be ongoing. You should not have to water morning and night. That is more than what they would need, and more than is necessary. Honestly, if they don't look good and they're giving you that much trouble, it might be time to think about something different.
Yeah, replace them probably for the third time.
Hello.
They're along a Colourbon fence, and the garden bed's not wide, and they're next to a concrete driveway, so they do get a lot of heat. Not direct light, but maybe.
It just sounds like the wrong plant for that space. So permission to dig them out and replace them.
Yeah, all right, no worries. Thank you.
Pretty drastic, James, but there you go. Yeah.
Yeah, no worries. Thanks.
All right, cheers for that. And let's go to Stratton. Shirley, how are you going?
Good morning, girls.
Morning.
I'm great.
Good.
What I rang for was the moment you rang up about the lemons. My lemon tree is about 18 years old now. Now, I have an organic garden. I know we've got chemicals in the air. But anyway, I'm just wondering if he has an organic garden, because the only fertiliser I use on my lemon tree, all over my garden, is Smith Grow, which is organic. I had that trouble with my yellow lemon. Now, I just don't eat the yellow lemon, and I don't use them. I just go in the bin, because the lemon tree is the only citrus tree, I was told, that you can actually juice green and you can use whatever you like. And I do. I pick them green when they're nice and big and green, and they're just beautiful lemons.
Okay, and what variety is it, Shirley?
Oh, look, truly, my daughter had bought it for me, so I have no idea, but I know I get lemons all year round.
Mm. All right, well, that...
Because I actually need lemons all year round.
Mm. Well...
So it's just interesting. I'm just wondering if there is a... I mean, I don't worry about the answer, but I'm just thinking, well, if he's listening, maybe just put them in the bin like I do, and I just use the green ones. And they're beautiful.
And are they dry at all in the middle, or are they still?
No. Because I juice every morning with a lemon, I use a couple, and I'm using lemons and others. No, they're beautiful inside, absolutely beautiful.
But the yellow ones are brown inside totally, yes, or just a spot?
No, they're rotten inside, really.
Right, okay, all right, well, yeah, we need to find an answer.
I don't worry about it, because I've got plenty of lemons on the tree that I use.
Mm, all right.
And they're just beautiful, the green ones.
All right, well, thanks for that, Shirley.
It's crazy, doesn't it?
Yeah, no, appreciate your call. Thank you, Shirley.
Okay, bye.
Okay, bye for now. Now, before we head into the 9 o'clock news, we're going to give away a $75 gift voucher, compliments of Paul and Linda Michener from Green Life Soil Co. in Middle Swan. Their motto is delivering a greener garden, and if you go to greenlifesoil.com.au, you can browse their free Perth gardening guides and downloadable resources. The April newsletter has just hit our inboxes and is brimming with excellent autumnal information. It's free. Simply register online, greenlifesoil.com.au. I do recommend that. And this week on Green Life's Facebook page, I spied heirloom carrot seeds. Different colours, different shapes and sizes, and being heirloom, no doubt excellent flavour as well. And Linda says now is the perfect time to plant your carrot seeds, so give them a go. Green Life Soil deliver across the metro area and also provide courtesy trailers. They're open Monday to Sunday each week. We recommend you browse their Facebook page for updates or give them a call. Now, for your chance to win a $75 gift voucher to spend at Green Life Soil Co. True or false? We often talk about what is a fruit and what is a vegetable. True or false? The US state of Arkansas has chosen the tomato as both the state fruit and the state vegetable. True or false? The US state of Arkansas has chosen the tomato as both the state fruit and the state vegetable. Give Bev a call now on 9484 1927. You know the drill. Must be a member not to have won a prize in the last 28 days. Go for it, guys. 23.1 right now. The humidity is sitting at 33%. You can expect a mostly sunny day today with a maximum of 32. Overnight, the minimum will be 18, which is pretty warm. And tomorrow will be sunny, maximum of 34. And overnight, heading into Monday, the minimum will drop down to 17, maximum of 31, and a sunny day on Monday as well. So looking ahead at the rest of the week, we've got 29s and 28s, and that I can handle. I just don't like a 3 in front of it, as everyone already knows, and I can't change the weather, so just do my best. We grin and bear it.
We
make
do.
The most of it.
And we've got a winner, Ray.
We do. We have Jeanette of Beachborough. Now, she has won the $75 gift voucher from Green Life Soil Co. Let us know what you do with it, Jeanette. And the question was, true or false, the US state of Arkansas has chosen the tomato as both the state fruit and state vegetable. And the answer is true. The vine ripened pink tomato, to be exact. So they regard it as a fruit and a vegetable in Arkansas. Good on you, Jeanette. Very, very clever of you. Very soon we'll be speaking with Lynn Chambers from Tulips with a Difference. That'll be coming up any moment. Now, you've got some information there as well.
I've got a couple of emails to get through, but also what's on this weekend, Ray? The Fern Society have their monthly meeting, and it's on tomorrow at the Manning Senior Citizen Centre, corner of Ley, L-E-Y, and Downey Streets in Manning. They get there around 2 o'clock. The main topic this week is how to divide and remount elkhorn and staghorn ferns. And we'll be discussing and demonstrating everything about dividing these ferns and remounting them on boards and shields. So that is a subject that people are often interested in.
Yes, very much
and,
so.
And I'm sure they'll also give us some insight into the value of them, because often you see elkhorn ferns that are mounted and there's multiples of them, and people are trying to sell them for lots and lots of money because they're big, but are they really that valuable? Well, John has a collection. It was at 70, but now it's well over 70, all numbered and
John,
all different, and including silver ones. But the staghorn ones, the staghorns are the individual specimens that are worth more money.
Mine's a silver stag. That I've got. So I'm very
silver elk.
No, I don't think so. I'm pretty sure it's a stag.
Really?
Is there no such thing?
Well, I'm not sure.
Oh, okay.
To be continued.
All right. Okay. As promised, we're heading to Tulips with a Difference. We've got Lynn Chambers online. How are you, Lynn?
Not too bad, thank you.
How are you really?
Yeah, because a few months ago you were in hospital when we had a scheduled appointment with you.
Yes, yeah. No, I'm improving, but slowly. So it's going to be a long road.
Oh, well, quickly tell us the story of what happened that morning.
I was getting some garlic from a neighbouring farm who was growing it, and I was walking off a wooden veranda and fell through it.
Gee whiz.
But then I fell off the veranda with my leg in the hole and hung by my leg for about 5 minutes before they were able to prise the next board off to get my leg out. So, it wasn't a nice journey.
So what did you do to your leg? What happened to your leg?
I've ended up with a 9-centimetre clot in my calf.
Oh, for goodness sake.
An extensive bruising from knee to ankle and nerve damage. And, so I'm still hobbling around. But I didn't break it, so that's all good.
How do they treat that, Lynn?
Yeah, that's another story.
Another story in itself. Okay. Oh, you poor thing. My goodness, the things that happened to us.
Yeah, I couldn't believe that morning when we heard what had happened. Just awful. So really feel for you, Lynn. Anyway, on to brighter things.
Happier things, yes.
Autumn's here.
Yes.
Yes, it is.
And what does that mean for bulbs?
Oh, it's a good time to plant any time from now onwards, although we're looking for rain like everyone else is too.
Oh, yes.
So there isn't an urgency to get them in the ground, but with the change in temperatures, that's what stimulates the bulbs, regardless if we get rain or not. Some are stimulated by rain, of course, but the change in temperatures will make them move anyway. So it's a good time to get them in the ground and they get on with it when they're happy.
So what sorts of things could we be popping into the ground? Give us some heads up.
All your spring flowering bulbs, so your daffodils, your ranunculus, anemones. Tulips go in a bit later when the ground has cooled down. So we usually recommend not planting before the middle of May. Into June, you can even go into July. When we had open garden here, we used to start planting around about the 21st of June and go through until the early July, because we wanted them to flower end of August into September. So we'd start planting the late flowering varieties first and then end up with the early flowering varieties, because they only take 6 weeks to come into bloom.
Wow, that's not long.
No, which is lovely. And you get extensive flowering over the time. And that's the same with all the bulb families. There's early, mid and late flowering varieties.
Mm.
So if you want an extensive show, if you choose varieties that cover that range, you end up with flowers for a number of months.
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah, like with daffodils, the multi-headed daffodils will start flowering at the end of June. And you can go right the way through until October with daffodil.
Yeah, and really enjoy them.
Oh, yeah. And there's some such pretty, pretty different varieties
variations
out there.
How
many varieties might there be, Lynn, available to us here?
Oh, we carry over 500 different varieties.
Oh.
So it comes back to the families and what you're interested in. So there's lots of options. About 60 of those are tulips. The rest are other things. So there's a huge range. There's autumn flowering bulbs as well as summer flowering bulbs. But the spring ones is a great range. And most of them, or just about all of them, you can leave in the ground long term. So you don't have to dig them up.
Mm.
They just come up and do their thing each year.
So with the tulips, people should be buying now and then chilling them first?
Yeah, it depends on where you are, but if you don't get extensive cold winters, it's better to chill them, because you end up getting longer stems, and that's the only reason you do chill them, is to get longer stems.
Right.
It doesn't alter the flower itself. The flower will come regardless, but you will have short-stemmed tulips if you don't chill them.
Mm.
So a rough rule of thumb is that the normal height, or that we say in our catalogue. So say if you've got a 50-centimetre tulip height, if you don't chill it, it'll flower at about 25 centimetres, so about half the height. So it just depends on what kind of a look you want and where you're planting it. If you get a lot of strong wind, shorter varieties are better because they support each other.
Yeah, yeah.
The taller ones will
lie down.
Yeah.
Do you distribute, like, your bulbs, are they readily available around Perth, or do people have to come to you, you know, via online?
We supply Waldex. They've got them.
Right.
Most people order online or go to them.
So
there's lots of options. We do a few shows at different times of the year, but more down this way than in Perth. So we supply Australia wide. So.
And when we get our hot hands on our little bulbs, what should we do? What sort of things can you give us some tips about, or our listeners, so that we get the most out of them?
One of the most important things is to check your pH in your soil and your potting mix. We've found potting mix that good branded ones, that the pH isn't neutral where it should be. And if the pH isn't right, your bulbs or any plant won't be happy and won't perform as well as it should.
Well, that's interesting in itself, isn't it? Like, you do hear of people saying, I planted these bulbs and they didn't fire, you know?
And more often than not, that's the case. I had a good customer from Albany who was a keen and still is a keen hippiastrum grower.
Oh, my favourite.
And she rang me one year who bought a number of different bulbs from us and they just weren't performing. And I asked her to check her pH and it turned out to be 9. And it was a good quality and that's why they weren't happy.
So what do you do? What do you do if people...
Just get a test kit. They're not expensive. Nurseries will carry them or Bunnings will as well. The one we use is the one in the packet. There, you can get ones that are gauged that you poke in the soil, but I haven't used those. I've used the packet one.
So if the pH is too high, what can listeners do to correct their...
Well, it's either adding lime or sulphur to alter the pH. So lime raises it, sulphur lowers it. Mm. So the actual kit will give you instructions on how to do that.
Yeah, okay. So that's a very important tip because it's just not something we think about.
It's a basic.
And we go and buy our expensive potting mix and we think we're doing the right thing.
And it will tell you on the bag that it's around X pH. So actually one of the things I would... possibly look for is the rose potting mix, I think, is more neutral, or 6 to 7, that would be more suitable, Lynn?
Well, general potting mix should be the same, between 6 and 7. Just check them.
Yeah, good tip.
We've bought good quality ones and found that they're not what they say. And it comes back to how well rotted they are when they bag them. If they've not been rotted down enough, that pH will change in the bag. Mm. So, it's just safer to check. It doesn't take long. And then you know that you've got it right.
And can you tell us some of the autumn bulbs to flower and is it too late to plant them?
Mm. It's getting towards the end of autumn time. You can plant them. That's fine. But with most bulbs, if you don't get them in the ground, they'll do their own thing anyway. They'll start flowering even though they're not in the ground. So some of the varieties are coming towards the end of their flowering time. But there are varieties like with Nerines. Once again, you've got early, mid and late flowering varieties. So some don't flower until winter. And you've got ones like rain lilies, which are stimulated by the first rains, which we haven't had, of course, so we haven't had any flowers yet. So they will get on with it. The same with autumn snowflakes. Because we've not had rain, they haven't moved. So there's still time to plant those kind of things.
Very good. What are some good companions if you're planting them in pots?
It comes back to flowering time and the look that you want. If you're wanting a major impact all at once, get something that flowers at the same time as something else. A good combination are grey hyacinths and miniature daffodils. There's two varieties, Jetfire and Tete-a-Tete, which flower at a similar time. They're miniature daffodils. And they flower at the same time as grape hyacinths. So you can make a lovely combination of heavenly blue grape hyacinths, which are deep blue, and the bright yellow daffodils. They're a similar height.
They look amazing.
Yeah. I've planted them as a border on a bed and planted them alternatively, so a clump of the yellow, a clump of the blue, and so on around, and it looks wonderful when it's in full bloom.
So hyacinths grow well in the ground?
They a hyacinth?
They're a grape hyacinth, or muscari is probably...
Oh, okay, yeah.
You've got your normal hyacinths, which are the beautiful fragrant ones with the big flowers. They're different again. So grape hyacinths have a flower about the size of your thumb and only short-stemmed, where normal hyacinth spring flowering ones are
not,
much larger.
So not to as confuse, all right.
Yeah. Yeah, but if you're wanting to do a bowl, a large bowl or pot, with extended flowering, you can put different varieties and different flowering times, combine them in a bowl, and then you'll have ongoing flowers happening. I've got some big bowls here, which I've got over 100 bulbs in, and of different flowering times and different varieties. So tall ones in the middle, short ones on the outside. And they start off with the multi-headed daffodils, which flower, you know, June, July, and go right the way through Dutch iris, tulips, hyacinths around the outside edge. So, and bluebells, all of those. So I get a colour happening throughout the 2 or 3 months over that time. And as they finish, I just trim off the heads so they don't look untidy.
Yeah.
Last year you did a workshop for the Perth Garden Club, and we were amazed at how many bulbs you could multi-plant in a pot in layers.
It was,
do you remember roughly what the numbers were of how many bulbs we got into one pot?
It comes back to the size of your pod. Mm. You can plant the bulbs so that they're not quite touching, so they're quite close together. It really comes back to the look that you want. So, like, for example, with a tulip in the ground, you plant them around 10 centimetres apart. But in a pot, you can lessen that to probably about 2 centimetres apart. And what you end up with is a really full pot with lots of blooms happening. So like a 17-centimetre pot, you could probably get 8 tulips in that quite comfortably, where in the ground you'd spread them out more than that.
Mm.
But because they're in a pot, you get that really full, lovely look to them.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. Well, you've inspired me to go bulb shopping now, Lynn.
There's nothing like a collection of pots grouped together with lots of colour bulbs and annuals, and it's just
pure joy.
It is, isn't it? Yeah, yeah. Makes you feel good.
All right, Lynn, we'll let you get on with your weekend. We wish you obviously well in your continued recovery. And
thank you.
Are you headed up to Perth for any events in the next year, this year, or...?
No, not at this stage.
Not yet. Okay.
No, yeah.
We get it.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, love. All the best.
And Thank you.
Appreciate your time.
Thanks, Lynn.
Cheers You're for welcome. That.
Okay. Bye.
And that was Lynn Chambers from Tulips with a Difference. Very down-to-earth lady, isn't she?
Oh, and she hosted a great workshop for us last year.
I missed that. Mm. Okay. Next time.
A lifetime of music, cartoon radio.
24 minutes after 9, you're with Ray and Faye. This is Let's Talk Gardening. We're heading to Gooseberry Hill. We're talking about pH in soil. Eileen, good morning.
Good morning. That's very interesting conversations you've been having with the bulbs.
Yeah.
Because I'm in Gooseberry Hill and can't dig a hole. So I grow everything in pots and I move them around. Like the paint lilies, they've just been out in flower, but they're in huge, great big pots. So I actually put a cover over them so that keeps the heat out. I double pot a lot of things so that I have a big pot sitting in a big pot that's got a water well.
Yes.
And the water runs out and I catch that water in a container and put it back. Anyway, when you're talking about the pH and what have you, we've got a group that buy useless. Oh, you've got a restriction on how much you can spend. And one of the things I was given a couple of years ago was one of those meters that measures the soil, whether it's dry or wet or alkaline or pH. That's the most useful thing. It just comes with. And I test all my potting mix now because sometimes I just have to top up the pot. And sometimes, because I plant lots and lots of bulbs in one pot so that one lot comes out and another lot comes up and that's how they go. But then you've actually got to tip them all out and start again.
Yes.
Because they just end up with nothing left in the soil. But as I said, that meter, and as for planting lots and lots. But I also have got another problem at the moment. We've had a dreadful problem with cushiony scale. And a lot of the bulbs that they're in the pots, I put them away for the summer because they don't like to get too hot. But then I've discovered that some of them have actually been attacked by the cushiony scale. So I actually bagged and sprayed them with neem oil. But when I spoke to the neem oil people, they said that I shouldn't be doing that. But so I don't know whether it's because it's been a really dry, hot summer. That's why the cushiony scale have attacked the bulbs, because it's the first time I've ever had that problem with the bulbs. Even some that are up on the drive, who are bare, they're not buried in the soil, they're chopped. I had to rescue those. Once I found one lot of cushiony scale, I then did the round. And I had to dig them out, and I gave them a dusting with dusting sulphur.
Yes, yep.
But I haven't planted them. They're apricot and white ones that they have lots of green leaves on them usually, but they die off. The cushiony scale has just been so bad on everything.
Well, I'm surprised that it is the cushiony scale. Like, I've experienced similar when I've not looked after stored bulbs, and I got mealybug amongst them. But,
mealybug, yep, that's right.
Ah, okay, so that makes sense. Yeah. But that's good that you've treated it and keep an eye on it and keep those bulbs away from others and don't reuse the same potting mix as well. Ditch the potting mix.
The ones that I really found, is I've had to dig them all up because they were all spare. You know, like the naked ladies, they've come out, but they didn't seem to get affected. And they're right at the bottom end of the property. But the ones that were up on the driveway, they really got affected by that mealybug. Mm-hmm. And they were growing in the ground, but because they were out, so I've taken them all out, but I haven't put them back in yet.
Yeah. Well, keep an eye on them. And if you have got bulbs that are badly affected, you are better off to get rid of them.
Yeah.
Just get rid of them. Yeah. Always start with good quality bulbs. Well, thanks for your call, Eileen. We have to move on.
Okay.
Cheers for now. Bye. Thank you. And you've got some more information at hand?
I do. Poor Cheryl says she had a senior moment the other day and picked up the wrong tub of slow-release fertiliser.
Happens to us all.
Well, no surprise. There are such a range. And unless you're checking the fine print every step of the way, you could easily pick up the wrong one.
Without a doubt.
So she has picked up the pots and planter slow release instead of native slow release fertiliser. She's used it on grevilleas, hakeas, banksias, native grasses, etc. And she's concerned that it's going to cause irreparable harm. Is there anything she can do to rectify it? Well, I would, depending on how you've actually applied it, Cheryl, if it is sparingly spread around, you're probably okay. If you've thrown big handfuls at the plants and it's close to the roots, then that would be cause for concern. But interestingly, what John has come up with in doing a search, I've asked him to look at the analysis on the packet, and it actually says that that brand and variety contain less than 2% phosphorus. Now, this is indicated by the P in NPK, or the ratio is what it refers to, and means it can be safely used on most Australian natives. Now, the plants that are affected by phosphorus are many of our West Australian natives in the Proteaceae family. So these include grevilleas, banksias, hakeas, for example, many pea-flowered shrubs, also Devesia, Hardenbergia, Canadia, etc., and also perhaps half of all acacias. If you've only used a very small amount and you've spread it evenly, a couple of things you could do is just pull it back, pull the surface back so that it's more diluted around the plant. Only 2%, so you probably will be okay.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So Yep, scary time. I know it's a panic
when
panic
you do
stations,
something like
when
that.
Something like
absolutely.
That does happen.
Absolutely. Mm.
And I'd like to acknowledge that we did receive your photos, Kay. These are the
proteas
that you called in about. And it actually says re-pin cushion dyeing. The spray she used was liquid copper. So I would be concerned
fungicide.
About the time, the timing that this was used, bearing in mind that in February, each week we had 40 plus degrees. So if the plants were struggling at that time, cutting them back and spraying them under those weather conditions would be like putting a nail in the coffin. Mm. I can also see that there is some slow release fertilizer around the base of the plant, and it looks quite sandy, so you would not fertilize a stressed plant. And the way the sprinkler is laying, it's quite close to the trunk, and it doesn't look to me that that could get an even watering around the plant. So it may be a sprayer, but it's laying down, it's not upright. Now, if that water is only going on that small section, then on the other side of the plant, the roots could well be dry. Mm. So, you know, it's the plant has been unwell, it's been cut back hard, it's been sprayed, watering is a question mark. So, you know what, Gay, it's actually time to pull them out and start afresh.
Yeah, okay? Definitely. Okay, we've got a pop-up sale coming up Sunday week, so that'll be the 14th of April. Nikki Waters, who comes in from time to time and shares her indoor plant knowledge with us, absolutely gorgeous lady from Goldleaf Greenhouse, they're hosting pop-up collector sale. Now, this is on Sunday the 14th, as mentioned. It's happening from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Andrew's Succulents, which is located at 12 Honey Street in Wanneroo. You can expect rare, uncommon and collector items of indoor houseplants, succulents, cactus, carnivorous plants, bromeliads, Hoyas, decor pots and plant accessories. The guests that will be there, we've got Red Rock Nursery, we know well, Shen Succulents, Bromeliads WA and others still yet to be confirmed. So keep an eye out for this. Put it in your diary. It's happening at Andrew's Succulents. Okay, so that's located at 12 Honey Street. That's happening Sunday the 14th of April between 9 a.m. and 2 p.m. I'm going to try and get along myself if I can. I think it will be sensational. And I've been watching the Facebook pages, and there's going to be a lot there, guys. Really nice time to add something special to your collection. Why not?
Okay. That sounds like an exciting lineup, right?
Always is. 94841927 is our number. We have about 25 minutes left of the program to get your garden calls through. What is next?
Well, we have gotten through the emails that we've been sent, which is
all right. Well, how's about? Okay, how's about? I give something away. Ooh-hoo. I think I know that the listeners will jump to this $75 gift voucher from Kerry, located at Bigger Trees in Pickering Brook. Now, Bigger Trees are the frangie tree specialists. They also have a huge range of ornamental and fruit trees as well. And they have bounced back beautifully from summer, and autumn conditions have enabled Bigger Trees to add new and magnificent stock to their range. And it's a perfect time for planting right now. So we suggest you browse their colourful Facebook page for updates and videos of the nursery. And if technology is not your thing, and we know to many of you it's not, why not just plot a visit to get up there sometime? From big plants to little plants, Bigger Trees does have you covered, and they deliver across the metro area for your convenience. Open Thursday to Sunday each week. Go to biggertrees.com.au for details, or just give them a call. You must be a Curtin FM member and not to have won a prize in the last 28 days. Here's John's curly quiz question for you. In 1971, Lobo sang a song called Me and You and a Dog Named Boo, in which he sings that he can still recall what kind of fields of St. Paul. In 1971, Lobo sang a song called Me and You and a Dog Named Boo, in which he sings that he can still recall what kind of fields of St. Paul. 9484 1927.
Now, Ray, I'm leaving you. I won't be here next weekend, but in my place will be Linda and Paul Michener from Green Life Soil Company.
Well, I look forward to that.
You will be in good company.
It will be. We'll have a nice time. Yes.
So I will be nannering.
Yes.
Four children for a week.
For a week. Are you serious?
Yes.
How does that roll?
Well, I'll tell you if I make it through.
Three, at home?
Three are six and under. Well, it's the end of the school holidays, and then it'll be a couple of days going into school. So, yeah, I'll see you on the flip side.
I'm glad it's happening to you. All right. Do we have time, let me see, for a song?
I guess we do.
What do you think? I think we
can. Can we have me and you and a dog named Boo?
Oh, we could. You'll have to give me a moment to find that one. Okay, so
I'll just keep talking, will I?
Oh, you can do that.
Well, I've been in contact with Catherine Hubble, and she will be joining us in the studio on the 27th of April. Now, Catherine is a great source of knowledge and wisdom, and one of the things that she will be talking about is her experiences with chili thrips, which are, you know, everyone wants to find a solution to. But she's listened to an inspiring podcast, and the topic is about working with nature and the wildness in ourselves, which wants to celebrate living. I'll send you the podcast interview with Nora Bateson, which is combining In My Head with Buddhist psychology teaching from Tara Brach and a desire to see verdant life everywhere. And there's also Regeneration Rising, which people might like to have a listen to. And, you know, it's a different way of looking at things in the garden. She inspired us with the milk probiotic, adding molasses. So a different approach to gardening that's using safe chemicals for the environment.
Okay. Now, would you like our song?
Yes, please.
Okay. Let's try this. Curtain Radio. And yes, we are here, Ray and Faye. This is Let's Talk Gardening, and we do have a winner for the $75 gift voucher from Bigger Trees. The question was, in 1971, Lobo sang a song called Me and You and a Dog Named Boo, which you just heard. And in that song, he can still recall what kind of fields of St. Paul. Well, of course, the answer was wheat fields. Good on you, Andrea of Les Murdy. Gift voucher on its way to you. Let us know what you get up to with that. And let's head to Beckenham. Rosa, good morning.
Hi, good morning, ladies. I've got this beautiful hibiscus that my brother won when he was at primary school. He was about 7 or 8. And he's 62, and he's 62 this year.
Wow.
And it grows about a metre high and half a metre wide. It's a double curly flower, and it's a beautiful red. But every year when the buds come out, it gets attacked by these aphids, and the buds are just covered with this grey. You just see grey. That's all you see. And it's so many on there. I tried washing it with the hose, just with water.
Yes.
But I've seen a few ladybirds on there, but not many.
That's okay, Rose. That is the sign that I wanted to hear. The fact that you've got any ladybirds means that it is only a matter of time before they deal with this. Now, when you've got aphids, you've got food for ladybirds. So the ladybirds don't bother to turn up before there's food. Once there is food, they come in and they will lay their eggs because there's a food source for them. In time, and it probably only take less than a couple of weeks, those ladybird larvae will hatch, and a ladybird in its lifetime is known to eat up to 400 aphids.
Yeah, so, I've seen a lot of the ladybirds that, you know, haven't mutated or whatever. You know, they're just, you know how they look like a strange little creature.
Yes,
I've seen a lot of them around, but I'm sorry, I do wash the the plant down, but I'm frightened of killing the ladybirds.
Yeah, no, that's... Look, I would not do anything now other than go out and keep a look, because you've seen ladybirds. There is a high chance that you will also have hoverfly larvae. Lace wings will come in, and they will also, their young will target aphids.
Yeah.
And
I don't get hardly any flowers, you know, and it's a beautiful flower. And I hardly, if I get any, I could go get three or four flowers, but the rest are just covered with all these aphids.
It's only a matter of time. And
yeah.
And I can almost guarantee you that all of what you see are not aphids. There is bound to be some wasps turning the aphids into mummies as well.
All right.
You take, okay. If you want to take photos for me, I'll identify them for you.
Okay. I'll have to wait to see if there's still any more left on there, because I just gave them a wash last night.
Okay. Yep.
Because there's such a beautiful plant. I mean, I've had it for that many years, and I just can't get enough flowers, and there's so many hundreds of buds on them, but they're all covered in these grey, and it's all grey, and then the buds fall off.
So the other thing to do, late September, early October, prune it back by about a third and feed it. So then you will get bigger blooms and more blooms next year. Also give it controlled release fertilizer for flowering and fruiting plants. That will help encourage more flowers as well.
Okay. Okay. Thanks a lot.
Okay.
Bye, thanks, Rosa. It wouldn't be a hibiscus beetle or anything.
Said aphids.
No, I know. So, I know what she said, but yeah. I'm just adding to
and
that.
And that's why a photo will help as well.
Yeah. All right, we're in Mount Helena. Lorraine, good morning.
Good morning. I have a question about leaf cutter bees.
Yes Lorraine.
I need to know how I get rid of the little devils.
Oh, my goodness.
They have absolutely decimated my crepe myrtles. I mean, I don't want to kill them. I just want them to go away.
They will.
Well, they'll be going to sleep now.
Mm. Oh, good. But how do I stop them coming back then? Because I've decimated both four crepe myrtles and four rose bushes.
Well, I wish I had that problem.
Well, you can have it. I'd be happy to give it to you.
Well, there's no way I can think of that you can actually stop them coming. They don't eat the leaves. They use them for nesting.
No,
I can think of hundreds of people who would die to have that problem in their garden.
Well, they can definitely, my trees just thought, they have eaten every single leaf off four crepe myrtles.
Mm.
So, and
are they perfect?
I won't kill them.
Are they perfect circles in the leaves?
They are.
Yeah.
And they started from the bottoms, and I noticed them, and I thought, oh, I don't really know what it is. And, yeah, they just continue to eat every single leaf destroy every single leaf or take them with them to build their nests, whatever they do with them.
So the crepe myrtles are just
how
about...
How do I find where they nest?
Well, there's two types that I know of. Mm. Some will nest in the ground. I've had them nest in pots below... Yeah,
there's no pots there, so...
Okay, and another spot I've found is like in the mortar joints of my brick wall where there's a gap. I've seen them going in there. So cracks of old buildings like limestone walls.
Yep.
Sometimes people find them in folds of fabric.
Yeah, I have... like gravel walls, what, gravel rock walls, I can't remember what they're called. Will they go into the gaps in those?
If they find a suitable nesting space, they might. Have you not seen leafcutter bees on your roses, like in the flowers?
I've seen them, no. I have never seen one, which is why I didn't know what they were until someone actually said to me that's what that would definitely be, because I had a friend come and look at them. And she said that's what they'll be. But I haven't, mind you, I have a half acre property. I don't always get out there when they might be flying around.
So your crepe myrtles are getting ready to drop all their leaves anyway, Lorraine.
Drop their leaves anyway.
That's right. So it's not a drama.
But I did read somewhere it said I should cut the branches back that are affected. Is that?
No.
I don't think that would make any difference.
No. That would be totally unnecessary. Honestly, I've never heard of them taking as much leaf as you're describing.
Yeah, well, maybe I've got lots of them. I don't know. They haven't touched. I have got a lot more leaves and bushes and things around, but they seem to have only attacked the four out of the five crepe myrtles that I've got.
Mm. Well,
they haven't done any damage anywhere else.
If you were me, you would go out there in the middle of a sunny day and stand and watch for 10 minutes to observe them coming. And I know on my roses, like, often they will only go for the new growth, not they don't go for the older ratty leaves. Yeah. They're quite particular. No. And
it was the new growth because two of the roses were new.
Mm.
And it just it happened like over the summer. And it's the first time I've seen them. I've been here 3 years and it's the first time it's happened. So, I want to kill them. I don't want to kill any of the good bugs anyway. But, I just thought there might be a way of deterring them. But if there isn't, I will just have to put up with
them.
And hope they don't come back again.
Honestly, I couldn't even. That would not have ever been part of my mindset to deter them. I reckon if you saw them, I think your mindset might change at the wonder of what's going on in your garden and the fact that you're lucky enough to have them. And if you then were able to observe where they're nesting, it just changes the joy in your garden.
Yeah. I would be a lot more joyful if I had decent-looking trees. That's okay. Not a problem at all. Thank you for that. I now know that I can't deter them. That's fine. They'll just have to stay there.
All right, Lorraine. Mm. Take care.
Okay.
Thank you. Cheers for that.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay. We'll be back in a moment. Curtain Radio. And you're tuned to Let's Talk Gardening with Ray and Faye. Got about 4 minutes left to go. Faye, you've got some information you'd like to share.
I have. This is a lovely email that's come in this morning from Jude. And she says, it was me who won the irrigation system for my disabled son. Remember?
Oh, I do remember. Yeah.
It's perfect and he can check things or we can do it from our app. It's set and forget. So grateful.
Love to hear that.
Yes. Thank you, Jude. That's really nice to hear. So she's sitting here listening to us while relaxing after a big day yesterday. The RSL WA Poppy Ladies and many planting volunteers completed an installation yesterday. And there are photos on the Facebook page of the RSL WA Poppy Ladies project. Now, I've actually just shared that to the Let's Talk Gardening Facebook page so people can find it easily. She's the coordinator and is so proud of the team. Some of them have been there since 2014. The volunteers were amazing, mostly from Justice Department, Veterans Service, Department of Vet Affairs, Government House staff, Karakata Club and others. It's in the Government House gardens and all are welcome to visit. The gardens are open for extended times over the month, and we will be at the Government House Open Days next weekend. People can assemble or purchase a poppy and plant around the lone pine. So a very symbolic act. The Anzac in front of Government House is made of lavender shade poppies and is absolutely mesmerising. The letters are 1.8, or for the old school, 6 foot high. Just thought some of your listeners would be able to make the trip to the city and visit the beautiful gardens. Great show, and I get so many tips from you and your guests and listeners. You're amazing women. Wasn't that lovely? That's two.
Nice. We're going to laminate that one as well.
Thank you. Well, it is the feedback, the emails and the calls that come from our listeners that make our show what it is.
100%. 100%. Keeps us very happy little gardeners. Now, Helen in Falcon said, how much can she cut back her salvias? They're quite spindly.
You can Well, a couple of things. You could cut them back right the way down if they're pushing out some new growth at the bottom.
If there's growth at the bottom, yeah.
The other thing is you might like to do kind of half and half. I'll sometimes do, say, the back half of the bush and then wait for that to get some recovery and then do the front half of the bush.
Mm.
Or you can just go. And it does depend on the
salvia. It does.
There's no one rule fits all. We have a podcast with Ben Mayo.
Yeah.
And that is available. That talked all about salvias, the different types, and how to manage them.
Yeah, exactly. So, as you say, it very much depends on the salvia as to when you do cut it back. But it sounds like they, being spindly, possibly.
They start to tell you when they've had enough.
Yeah.
And I've started cutting a couple of mine back, or just deadheading really, and then tweak the soil, give it a water, fertilizer, and you get some quite good recovery pretty quickly.
From them, okay. Thanking Bev Daring and John Glidden for their support this morning. As Faye mentioned, you'll be absent next week. We will have Linda and Paul Michener from Green Life Soil in the studio with me. I look forward to that. And my gardenism for the morning is, my life now is just trees. Trees and champagne. Quoted by the iconic Judi Dench. And, you know, if you go to ABC iView, there's a show with Judi Dench in it called, it's a documentary called My Passion for Trees. It's one of the best shows to watch. It is just brilliant. She is sensational, Judi Dench. Okay, stay with us for Jim Crinan and the classic 70s. We wish you a safe and happy weekend. Look after yourselves. Keep cool. Yeah. And we will return, or at least I shall return, next Saturday. Take care, everybody. We hope you've enjoyed listening to another edition of Let's Talk Gardening on Curtin Radio. Happy gardening.